Welcome to Mind Your Business, where we hear from the minds of successful business owners. I'm your host, Dan Monahan, financial advisor on the KBK Wealth Management team at UBS Financial Services Incorporated. Our office is located in Wayzata, Minnesota, and I can be reached at 952-475-9448. On today's episode, we will hear from the minds of Brian and Kent Rowers. Together, these brothers founded Rowers Companies. They will share their story of how they went from operating out of their car and driving all around the upper Midwest to running a nationally successful real estate investment and development company. Brian and Kent are not affiliated with UBS Financial Services Incorporated, and their views are their own. Now, let's start the show. Brian and Kent, thank you both so much for joining me today. Really appreciate you giving me some time and going through, you know, kind of your business and your, you know, hearing from what growth strategies you've been effective with. And I think our listeners will really learn a lot here today. Do you want to maybe start by giving a quick introduction of you know, who you are and what you do and a little bit about Rowers Company?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Thanks for having us. This is really great. We really appreciate you having us in here.
Yeah. I can kick it off because, you know, I'm the oldest brother, so I should start first.
Sure.
Right? I'm 18 months
older.
That's probably the first time you've ever heard that.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. I always have to point out who's taller. Still taller than you are. So.
Right. And I just point back who has more gray hair.
Yeah, right. Wow.
So my name is Kent Rowers. We started Rowers Companies back in 2012. Brian and I are 50-50 partners in the business. So I have been into the UBS offices here for many years as I was a wholesaler. So out of college, I attained my certified financial planning CFP and was a wholesaler and did that for many years, was successful at it, had a lot of fun, just always wanted to own my own shop and do my own thing. So that really was the driving force behind us creating and starting up Rowers Companies. A bit of our history is, you know, Brian was a CPA, and I'll let him go into that, with a big four accounting firm and running his own firm. I was doing wholesaling, and on the side, on the nights and weekends, we would do real estate. So we had about 20 houses around the University of Minnesota. We were into student housing. We had about 20 houses that we did lease to owns. We did some flips and rehabs and other things. And again, we were trying to get that to be our full-time job.
Sure.
But to do that, we needed to, at some point, have more scale. What was interesting was in our careers, and people would ask me what I was doing with my money, when I would tell them, hey, we're doing these 20 houses around the U of M or 20 lease to owns, we're starting to get into some hotels and trying to get into the apartment business, but just really finding trouble getting that opportunity to have an investment. When I would explain and tell that to others, everybody would say the same thing. And that was, the next time you do another deal, let me know. I'd love to be a business partner or invest with you. And so that really, after you hear that 300 times, you think, hey, maybe there's something here. So in 2011, 2 weeks before Christmas, the company that I was with shut down. And so 950 of us got laid off, you know, 2 weeks before Christmas. And that was really when I called Brian. And I said, that's it. I'm actually driving to the Bakken, to Western North Dakota. I want to take a look at opportunities and ideas that are out there because everybody's been talking about it and hearing about it. I'm going to actually go out there and see it. And I'm going to, you know, strike out and we're going to do something. So that's what I did, and that was really the start of Rowers Companies.
Very cool.
Yeah, so introducing myself, obviously Brian Rowers here. I am, as Kent mentioned, a partner, but obviously our relationship and partnership goes along about 45 years back, I guess I would argue, for me. I don't know if it's longer for Kent or not, but yes, it's longer for Kent. So my background is more in the finance or the accounting side of it, more systems, operational. So I came through, I would say, John's, and then went to KPMG, one of the big four accounting firms. From there, I started my own firm and ran that for 9 years with another lady. I was a 50-50 partner, all while we were, as Kent referenced, doing the real estate on the side. So when we started the business, you know, it was a lot of Kent really did the relationships, and Kent really is in the sales side of it. So when you think of me, you think of operations. So I used to run construction, and I ran development, and I ran all the operating functions of the firm. But that's really the inception of Rowers Companies, as Kent referenced, 12 years ago.
Great. So you got a CFP and a CPA running around North Dakota being, you know, real estate moguls.
Yep.
Right? Okay.
Yep.
Can you talk a little bit about how that partnership Are you going from brothers to partners?
Yep.
What that groundwork looked like? Did you have, you know, here's the rules, right? If we're 50-50 partners, what if we're split on a decision, or how you were going to navigate challenges that arise, knowing you have a relationship outside of your business partnership?
Yep.
Yeah, you know, I think for Kent and I, it's just because it goes back so far, you know. We always got along as kids. I mean, we had our fights. I can tell you at the time Kent pushed me and the TV went flying and mom and dad got upset, or the time I threw a hockey stick at him. And,
yeah.
So we have all those great stories. But where I get with that is it's really what has created the trust. I just always trust Kent's going to be there. And so, you know, you go from our best times when we're celebrating and high-fiving to the hardest times. And you referenced the Dakotas, and that started off as a great thing. You know, we paved the way where nobody else could figure it out. We just dove in. And it's where I think Kent and I proved we could get a lot done. Sure. We always joke we were very successful at building out that oil field housing. That success obviously came around when the markets changed. And that's when we really dug in. And, you know, I always know Kent's going to be there. And so that's what really starts with the partnership, is just having somebody you trust with your life. I mean, that's how it works. And so we've just been through some times that we had to really lean in on each other's and our skill sets, and that's a big part of the relationship of us. And so today we don't have a lot of battles. We disagree, but once we walk out of the room, we agree and we go full forward with whatever the decision is. So yeah, that's really been a part of doing those type of markets and coming through what we've talked about.
Okay.
Well, and I think what's unique about Brian and I is our parents really had a lot to do with the success and where we're at, because Brian and I, our parents owned small businesses growing up.
Oh,
so
sure.
We were very involved. Okay. I mean, at the age of 10, we were probably in making feed at my dad's elevator. So he ran a grain elevator and owned a couple of farms with some farmers. And then my mother really ran our lawn care business, where we got really involved. But we were doing the books, we were doing paperwork, we were doing accounting. You know, we then were out doing the actual lawn care services and everything else. And Brian and I looked at the business different then. And my parents joke about, you know, what got Brian all excited at the end of the day and what got me excited at the end of the day. You know, from my side, a more relationship sales guy, I was like, how many clients did I close that day, or how many new lawns did I get? Brian was more about how much production got done, or how much square footage, and so on. So,
and I crushed Kent. I got so many more lawns done than Kent could
And I reminded him he didn't have any lawns to do if I didn't sell clients.
There you go. So, it's a good 1-2 punch. Right?
Yeah. So we started very young doing that and really appreciating and understanding. We used to joke when we got into business together here then as adults, and half the time you don't even need to say anything. I know what he's thinking. I know where he's going. He knows the same about myself. And you know, so as we started Roars, it was more natural, I think, than setting any ground rules and groundwork. A, because we had worked together so long growing up, and then those houses as well. We were next to each other, tearing sheetrock out of basements that had flooded, and, you know, having to evict clients and having to raise rents and redo leases and just working through lots of problems. So it really wasn't that much of a change. It was just more time together. But I really missed and wanted to work with Brian so long, and I think the same is true with him, that it was easy to adapt to that. And as similar as we are, it helps in a lot of situations and opportunities, but we also have complementary skill sets. I mean, I love to be on the phone and in front of our investors and getting more investors and bringing in money. Brian can do that and does, but it's not what he is driven and has passion around. And the same is true on the other. He loves to come up with some innovative ideas, lead teams, and manage people. And I do as well, but he has a true passion for that. So I think we see each other and complement each other's skill set, where we can both do what the other does, but we have different passions.
That makes a lot of sense. And obviously it's worked out well for you.
Yeah.
You know, we fast forward now to 2024.
Yeah.
It's not just the two of you running around North Dakota. Can you give, you know, our listeners a little bit of a insight into where is Roars Companies now? What is your story in 2024?
Yeah, and maybe it pays to take a half a step back and then jump back right to today, because it really kind of, I guess, helps understand why we're at where we're at today. So when we went out to Western North Dakota, again, everybody talked about it. Nobody was doing anything. Brian and I went out there, and immediately I cashed in everything I had and bought the first piece of property. Then Brian started to cash in what he had and his net worth and started to buy the properties as well. And so, but what we were able to do was make things happen. So our first building out there was not a duplex. It wasn't a triplex. It was a 40-unit apartment building. And we had to drive around and talk to anybody and everybody that we've ever met in our lives. It took us 6 months to raise $1.5 million. But we always laugh and tell our salespeople that if they think they got a challenge now, back then, not only were we asking people for money and we had no experience, nothing to show for it, but we also needed them to sign on the personal guarantees of the dotted line.
Wow. Yeah.
So
yeah.
That shied away about 75% of the people that said yes to first investing.
Sure.
So it took us, you know, 6 months to raise $1.5 million. We got that project going, and then it was number two and number three and number four. It just took off from there. And the fun part was, is after a while, Brian and I just said, you know, why are we having to tell people what it's like out there? Why don't we rent King airplanes? And so we'd have four King airplanes at a time fly out to Western North Dakota. So two would come out of the Twin Cities, one out of Marshall, Minnesota, where we grew up, and one out of Alexandria, where we had a lot of family and grew up as well. And so we would have those people all fly into the eastern side of the Bakken. We'd put them on a bus. We'd tour them through the Bakken. We'd even have lunch at the man camps. We'd show them the properties we had built, the ones we had under construction, and the future ones we wanted to do.
Yeah.
And people would leave, but they saw the 2 miles behind stop signs and stoplights, and they saw people not able to get into restaurants and gas stations. And so they got to see it with their own eyes, and they got to understand what Brian and I were really doing, you know, boots on the ground type. And so that really started the business. What then occurred was in that 2014 and 2015 time era, was oil went from $120 a barrel down to $30, and that's when Brian and I looked at these personal guarantees and everything we had and these apartments starting to empty out and said, hey, we got to do something here because we're going to go under. And so after sharing with our spouses and kids that we're going to lose our houses, we're going to lose our cars, we talked to bankruptcy attorneys. We even had a workout specialist come in who patted us on the back when he done hearing our story and our paperwork and the numbers and said, you know, you guys are toast on this one. But, you know, there'll be another chance. Maybe in another 10 years from now, you guys will have another idea.
Yeah.
And it was out of that meeting that Brian looked at me and said, you know what? Why don't I take care of North Dakota? I'll take care of the investors, the banks. I will literally be on these bankers' front doorsteps every 2 weeks, which he was. And they finally had to explain that most people they're worried about don't ever return phone calls and they can't find them. And we were starting to bother them. But then Brian did that and he said, Kent, what you need to do is go out the front door, find more developments, more investors, raise more equity than we've ever seen anybody do. And if we do that, we have a chance of outrunning our issues and our problems in North Dakota. And that's what we did. So that's really what got us here to today.
Sure.
So a lot of times, Brian and I wonder, you know, if we didn't have our backs against the wall, how big would we actually be?
Yeah, right. You had no choice but to fight.
Yep.
And you did.
Yeah. No, and that's where, for me, I mean, obviously Kent goes through kind of the origination and the story, and that's what really has brought us to kind of, you know, there's a lot of middle ground in there to where we just believe in overcoming challenges is what creates you, what makes who you are. And so sharing those experiences are what's made us the firm today. And so I think to answer your direct question, and I wanted to pull it up, make sure I don't miss it, but so we've done this 85 times. So we have 85 projects we've developed.
Wow.
For 12,455 units. And then to my joke, we're one closing shy of $3 billion. So we're right at the $3 billion mark. And
when
all
Brian says $3 billion, he means $3 billion that we've developed.
Sure.
You know, and 12,000
yeah.
units that we've developed. So we've sold, you know, some properties. We've tended to hold on to more of them long term, but we have sold, you know, 11 or 12 different projects over our time.
That makes sense. Yeah. Did you ever think you'd get there, you know, back in the, when you were flying people into North Dakota to show them the opportunity you saw? Did you think $3 billion was a number that you'd ever have in your crosshairs?
Well, Brian can tell you exactly what our goals
so
were.
So we did.
Okay. They were not $3
billion. Sure.
In 2017, we sat down and we did the whole EOS concept,
sure.
which is after the book Traction. And we set the goal. I don't have it in front of me,
yeah,
account, but it was $2 billion. They said, pick your craziest, wildest goal. We were like, okay. By the year 2025, we want to be at 10,000 units. And
okay.
keep in mind,
okay.
we were at like 400 units at the time. So
yeah.
let's do 10,000 units. And how much real estate? Let's say $2 billion. Oh, yeah, that sounds cool.
And at the time, we were at like 100 million.
Yeah, okay.
So that was 2017. And then the checkpoint came in January of 23. The same closing was the 10,000th unit and the $2 billion in real estate. So we had achieved it, what we thought obviously not even imaginable, 2 years early, 3 years early.
Yeah.
And so we had to reset goals and go back at it. So, but the summary, obviously, like No, I never planned to be this size, never dreamed of it. But it wasn't out of the realm either, you know, just knowing we just grew up very humble beginnings, just one foot in front of the other, do what's right, do the right thing, and let growth happen. And so that's part of what we've done is just always, you know, really pushed hard. Ken has a phrase I always love, but it was really think big, start small, and scale fast. And so once we see something that works, we whipsaw it hard.
Sure.
And so, and that's kind of proven. I mean, but we've stayed very close to the real estate and to the housing class. It's what we know. And so Kent and I have said that, you know, we've been can't describe those houses we used to own. So we've just done housing. It's a fundamental need. It's a number two on the hierarchy of needs. And so it's what everybody needs. So that's why we love that class. And we do housing. That's what we do. And so we'll do a little bit of real estate. We'll do a little bit of retail or office or stuff here and there. But what we do is housing.
Sure.
So
very cool. So you said January 23 is when you crossed that $2 billion mark. And now you've got $3 billion
in.
I mean, that it went quickly, right?
It kind of compounds. So what's fun is probably Brian's biggest push. So when we achieved that, of course, we said, hey, we got 3 years left, right? Or 2.5 years left on this goal. So we just doubled them. So we said, hey, instead of $2 billion that we want to have in real estate, let's now change it to $5 billion. Keep in the year 2025 yet. Sure. And then rather than 10,000 units, let's do 20,000 units. And so it was just some fun changing of goals, but keeping the year the same that we wanted to hit.
Yeah, that's great. How many employees do you have now?
Yeah, so we're hitting 300 employees right now.
So quite a bit different than back in 2012, right?
Yeah, 2012 was Brian and I. Three years.
Well, and the funny thing is the joke that Kent and I, I owned a CPA firm for 9 years, and Kent would call me probably weekly, Brian, when are we working together? I'll come work for you. I'm like, Kent, the problem is you'd sell in about 15 minutes what I can do in a year. Like it just, product I had was super easy to sell, and it was really, but it took a long time. Then Kent would say, well, come work with me. I'm like, problem is like, you're such a sales oriented business. And so when this whole idea hit, I'm like, all right, Kent, let's go into business together. But here's my ask. I want to have zero employees. Like I want to just do business projects, deals. Like I'm a deal guy. Let's do that. And I don't think I finished the discussion, and we hired somebody, and then we hired somebody else.
Yeah.
And then the joke, and I obviously want the team to hear this, but like, I am super passionate. Like, I drive all of our leadership programs. We have a coach that coaches 32 people at our office.
Wow.
And so I'm super passionate about team and rolling things out they can do. Our team gets lunch in the office 2 days a week. We want them to come together, share a meal together. Kent's passionate part is make it healthy. And so, you know, but we do all this team stuff now, and we kind of chuckle because the original plan was nobody on the team.
You're right.
We're at 300 and lots of friends and family. Yeah. And, you know, you start to get to the point now where it's like people are getting married, and we have, you know, having kids. And I think we have, you know, I don't know how many babies the firm had last year as members, but it's just really fun to see that family grow, which is just totally developed over the last couple of years.
Very cool. How did that look, you know, those stages of expansion, whether it's acquiring more employees or, you know, new lines of business that you're doing? What kind of thought process went on? What were those conversations like between the two of you on making those decisions?
But I'd say the thing that we have in common is we both are pro growth. You know, we made money in 2022. We sold 11 properties, and we made more money than I ever thought we'd make in our lifetime. And we literally pushed 98% of it back into the firm. It's what our CFO and now executive Tom says is jet fuel.
Sure.
Because he's like, you know, I've worked with a lot of businesses. He has more in the banking world, but he's like, I've not seen this amount of money poured back into a business that on top of just being as involved as we are with our investors, just created so much growth and opportunity. And so it's really just like one thing Brian was talking about, you know, as we build one group, it needs another and another and another. It kind of builds upon itself. But, you know, here a couple of years ago, we decided, you know what, we want to do more development. Well, the thing you need to do is you need to, hire more developers.
Mm-hmm.
So we went out and hired 10 or 11 developers. All of a sudden, we went from a group of Brian and I to, you know, five people to all of a sudden 15 people. Well, then you need more equity. So, okay, well, let's go out and hire some more people that raise money from our individual investor network. And then, well, as those properties start opening, because those developers have put it together, then all of a sudden we need more property managers.
Sure.
And so, I mean, our property management group is a 120, 130 people in and of itself. Well, they're opening 11 properties this year. There aren't many firms in the U.S. that open 11 in a year.
Yeah, well,
it's a massive undertaking, you know? And then all of a sudden, that drives to, well, you know what? We've always wanted and thought about doing construction. We're having some challenges there. It would be easier if we brought it in-house. It would be another lever for us to have. It would add to the bottom line.
Sure.
But more importantly, it would give us the opportunity to really probably speed things up and drive down costs. And we've seen that with the volume because we're spreading it out between different contractors all over the U.S. So when we brought that in-house, all of a sudden we had three people that all they do is purchasing and driving down costs. And we've been able to save now about 15%. So it's just kind of one opportunity leads to another, and we've just been open to it. I mean, we've thought about having our own construction company probably for 10 years.
But yeah.
It was the timing was right and the positioning was there, and it gave us the opportunity.
Yeah, if you're building housing, it would make sense to want to do that internally.
Yep.
And it makes sense that there's going to be less cumbersome back and forth when you're not outsourcing that to a contractor. So, you know, you have these goals, right? And now we've doubled them for 2025. Do you have are you scaling what kind of employees you're going to need to achieve that?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's interesting. I thought that's what you were going to ask a minute ago, but as you look back over our history, our team has definitely, you know, we have some stability in it, some people that have been there for a long time, mm-hmm. But there's been a lot of turnover. And we just accept that as a piece that we love everybody where we're at. We move forward. But with the growth and with the push, there has been times when people are like, you know what? I don't want to go that fast. I don't want to work that hard. I don't want to
sure.
do that.
Yeah.
Like, that is awesome. Like, we are respectful of everybody. But we move forward with the team that we have. And so we keep adding. So it's 3 to 5 people start every Monday. And it's just continuing to grow yeah. like that. Now, what we look at, like, in this market, and part of it's, you know, just it's taking advantage of times when you should grow. And so, like, during COVID, when everybody else was kind of looking at what was going on out there, we had a discussion, and this discussion started as, we're going to lay off 3 people, we're going to cut all of our pay by 20%, we're going to do, you know, all these cost-cutting measures. And they're like, you know, or we could grow this, kick ground on this, start off with this, and then in 2 years from now, when we think it's going to be all right, these buildings will open up. And so that was the choice of the firm at the time in 2020, which is where Kent described that 22 when we had the big sales.
Yeah.
But everything we broke ground on in 2020, everything we capitalized on then came to fruition in 22. So we've been doing that. We retooled all of our markets back then. So today, while we say we're hiring 3 to 5 people, it's really the volume of construction has gotten there. Property management has gotten there. Our development team, we started this the real growth of this team in 2020, and they're just pushing out 14, 15 projects a year, which is what's put us on all the national lists suddenly.
Sure.
When you get a little bit of runway on that. So we expect it to continue. We expect it to keep going, and we're just continue to look 2 years forward. So, like, in today's market, which I won't teeter into there too much because I'm sure you got lots of questions on that,
yeah.
but as we look out 2 years, and what we see is a really positive future in 2 years from now. So we got to gut it out. We got to get through that, get the buildings up and started, so then 2 years from now we can be singing the praises of what we have for assets at that time.
Sure. 2026, you'll be saying, oh man, I'm glad we did that back in 2024.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So you have a strong outlook on where your industry's going. Do you care to share why or how you were coming to that conclusion?
Yeah, we'd love to.
Yeah. You want to start? You want me to?
Yeah, I can start.
Sure.
So yeah, I mean, and Brian will fill in some of the pieces that I miss and add more to it. But, you know, the number one reason that we're as positive as we are about the housing out front of us is, number one, we're currently short on housing. So we're 3.8
sure. yeah.
million units short of housing today. It only grows to 6.5 million in 6 years from now. So it doesn't go down. It doesn't stay flat. It goes up and it continues. And so the need for housing is here today and it will continue in the future. While we say that, apartment building has gone down by 50%.
Hmm.
So while we see the housing need going up and the numbers going up, the building of apartments has gone down 50%. And the reason is because of interest rates, right? That's probably the number one driver. I would say it's getting more challenging and it's getting more expensive. Those are underlying bullet points, but it is hard. It is tough. I mean, Brian and I say it's probably as difficult as ever for us to build and put together apartments right now. But again, the outlook is there. And so the piece that we also are seeing is where the demographics or people are moving to as well. You know, we do, you know, projects here in Minnesota, but we're doing as many in Texas as we are in Minnesota. Hmm. And I think we'll be doing as many in Florida here shortly as well, because we have three there and another three to start. So we're starting to spread out where we are building as well, just because people are choosing to move to that southeastern, those smile states or belt parts of the U.S. And we want to be a part of that.
Sure.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, you go back and people don't realize the hole we dug in during the recession of 2009, 2010, that we underbuilt so incredibly then that even with you see, and everybody, you know, you see the buildings going up and people always give us feedback, oh my gosh, the apartments are everywhere. Like, yeah, but two things. The first thing is we're building apartments on the major roads because everybody wants to be in retail areas and they want to be in close access to transportation. Sure. Or sitting on a light rail line. They want transportation and they want amenities. That's where we want to stay. So we're building the apartments where they ask for. Happens to be right where everybody drives by.
And you know, where people don't want to build, you know, houses. I
mean, well, yeah, would you want your single family home right there? Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what you're seeing, whereas like the apartments that are deteriorating are back in the neighborhoods. You know, they're buried in. They're a two-story or a three-story. And so we're building a lot of visible housing. But when you look at the numbers on any chart, any scale, anybody, we don't have enough housing in the U.S. today. And so that's a part that we're very passionate about. And so we're building that. And so that's where we went out in 2020, studied the entire U.S. and picked 10 markets that we wanted to be in. And then we keep watching that list, we keep running the numbers and pulling. So it's very numeric how we do it and why we do it. And if somebody asks, I'm like, I can show you the charts. I can tell you the numbers, you know, and not, I don't think it's a big secret, but my favorite one is apartment deliveries to job openings in a city. And it's something that we watched, you know, in COVID, everybody said you can move anywhere. And I agree. Yeah. Some people did that, but we knew people would stick where there was jobs.
Sure.
So that's why you'll always see Austin, Texas. Yes, it's been hot for a long time, but the jobs are there. Tampa, Florida, yeah. Dallas, Texas, you know, the Carolinas. There's just some great markets out there that have a lot of really good reasons to be there. And that's where we continue to plan to be.
Cool. That makes a lot of sense. And you guys obviously have a good pulse on where you want to be and why you want to be there. And that's important.
Yeah.
Probably not just for your company, but for the investors that are investing with you too. Can you talk a little bit about what that experience is like for your investors?
Yeah. In what regard?
Just, you know, if I were to, well, so I'm a CFP as well, yeah. Right? Yep. A CPWA. Yep. We'll just end it right there.
Yeah.
But to where a lot of what I like to work with clients on is diversification.
Yep.
And, you know, I would say, your company's private equity,
yep.
That makes up a good chunk of a well-diversified portfolio. Yep. What would an investor be looking for when they come for you? What is what is the output that they're going to receive from your company?
Yeah. So typically we're meeting with entrepreneurs. We have some professionals as well, like doctors, dentists, you know, CEOs and others. But the largest lion's share of our investor network is entrepreneurs, and they tend to introduce us to others as well. So we have a minimum. Our minimum used to be $100,000. Now it's $150,000 to invest in one of our projects. Most of our investors that we meet with, you know, they own a business. They don't have much debt, both personally and with their business. They're making a really good income, and they have, you know, their asset or their net worth tied to their business and with their financial planner and, you know, money in the markets. And so a lot of people don't have enough real estate, mm-hmm. and they really are intrigued by the asset class being, you know, something that's a hard asset, provides consistent income, its value tends to stay more steady, and it's something that they can get some tax advantages as it relates to depreciation and other means. So they're intrigued by it. They also like the idea of working directly with us rather than just being invested in a fund.
Sure.
That they don't know what's in there. I mean, if somebody invests in one of our projects currently in Victoria or Plymouth or Maple Grove or, you know, Lakeville, you name the community, they can drive by it and say, I own part of that,
yeah.
You know, that apartment.
That's
there.
A powerful, powerful thing.
Yep.
Yeah. So you talk about, you know, your key networking is with entrepreneurs. Do you think there's a reason for that? Why that's been how your market has evolved?
Interesting question. I mean, part of that is just because we align so well. I mean, the discussion we've had here today of how much, you know, entrepreneurial spirit and people driving, I think that's a big part of it. And the other part is just there's just so many grassroots values and hard work, ethics, ownership mindset that I think we carry. I think we align well with the investors. And the other thing I really think, you know, when Kent and I got this going, we had done investments into some of these other projects. And what I always laughed at is you do what you call, a sideline investment. And you'd put the money in and you'd never learn anything. You didn't know anything. And so
sure. And you wouldn't hear from the people, right?
I mean,
invested with other people. And it was like, as soon as I invested or wrote out the check, it was like crickets. Never heard from the person. They're gone, right?
So what we did right away is I said, Kiki, let me take my systems. We're going to send them updates because, A, they've earned it. It's the right thing to do. B, I think they can learn. They'll enjoy it. It's part of an experience of investing in something. What I never saw coming was the third prong to that one, which is our investors never call us. And so we always laugh because we have neither one of us have office lines. All we have is a cell phone. We have 850 investors. My cell phone is on my business card. We never get calls. And our theory for that is that we just inform them so well. Literally, we'll call them. They're like, why are you calling me? I know what's going on. So, but to answer your question, if that's what the experience they're looking for, they want to know what's going on. They want to be a part of it. And that's why I can't describe that asset. And then when they see the financials and they know what's going on leasing wise, and the part of it that they accept, which is there's sometimes we send out news that's not positive. We're like, look, the building is under leased, or we, had this issue and we had a flood in Des Moines at one of our properties. And so we tell people what's the true truth about that project, because we only have one project in there. They may own four different projects or six projects, but they're going to get a report on each one of their projects. And so that's where the alignment has really been. It's people that want to know what's going on. They don't want to actively be involved, and they just trust we're taking care of it.
When Brian says that, though, to add to that, we used to send out a construction update every 2 weeks on every project they're invested in, and then quarterly thereafter. The investors have told us that was maybe a little bit too much, especially when they have 10, 12 projects with us. But we'll send that out monthly. And they can click on it or they don't. And then they get a quarterly update once the property's operating as well, once it's out of construction, and they get a kick out of it. And then we do have fun client events that we do, and people enjoy getting together because it's, the old saying of, birds in a feather flock together,
sure,
or however that goes,
yep,
right?
Yep.
So it's a lot of people who started their businesses in their garages, so they're very humble. They've done very well, and they're very successful, and they have gotten to a really good place. But it's a whole collective group of those types of people. A lot of them charity-minded and driven nowadays.
Sure. Yeah, that's not too surprising. I just was curious if that was on purpose or just kind of how it came about. One thing that we work with a lot of business owners, and obviously this podcast is called Mind Your Business. It's talking to business owners that we see a lot when a business is selling.
Yeah.
For example, right? Hey, I built this business. I want to sell it. And, I've got these four locations. Now I got to sell the actual land and the building. Do you work with business owners that are doing that type of a transition without getting into tax advice?
Yep.
Right? Can you share what that concept is on the advantages of real estate to real estate exchanges?
Yeah. I'm going to try and be careful with the tax advice, right?
Don't put your KPMG hat on.
Actually an active CPA. I keep my CPA up. But I don't practice tax, so we try to be careful too not to give tax advice. But obviously, business owners know, right? The best tax efficient way to do it. Normally, they're taking those funds, redeploying them, reinvesting them into people and teams and businesses. So that's why we always work really, really hard to help them out with their taxes. Real estate is a great spot, as you know, but it tends to be a lower tax bracket. And so, our active income is at a higher tax bracket than real estate. It's lower, it's capital gains rates. So you're talking rates in the 30s or the 20s instead of the 40s and 50s. And so we do believe, and I saw it firsthand. So if I take my experience when I owned the CPA firm, I just laughed because we did really, really well and we were making good money. And I'd come home and tell my wife, I've been traveling, I've been doing this, but we're doing well. And at the end of the year, she's like, where's all the money at, Brian? I'm like, well, there's this thing called Uncle Sam.
Yeah, right.
And so once we shifted into real estate, you could capitalize on that because it's a lower tax bracket. Plus, there's just other ways and mechanisms to do trades and do exchanges. There's a 1031 exchange. Mm-hmm. There's opportunity zones. So we do have a lot of business owners that when they're selling their business will come to us before it sells. In fact, I just had one last week, and these people put in an immense amount of money to try and shelter some income or some taxes on a concept. And so real estate's a great spot to park wealth. It cash flows, it grows, and we're a big firm that obviously we're always careful of our friends in the financial planning world, because if somebody comes to us and says, I want to put all my money into real estate, we're like, whoa, no, this is not our job. Yeah. Our job is your diversifier. We want to be your alternative asset. But you have a financial planner, and they are to be managing all your wealth. And so we work really well. We always say we want the financial planner in the room because we want them to know what's going on so they can put the right picture together. That's right. Your job.
And that's, I would agree, right? Well, surprise, surprise, right? But there, like we were talking about, right, there's a diversification element that you bring to the table that you're not going to get in the stock market. You're not going to get in the bond market, right, for, being able to drive by and see that building. But there's risk to that too, right? And liquidity is one of them. And that's where, and I work with my clients a lot, it's all cash flow and what is the liquidity and needing to have, the right amount in there. And that's where I would, agree and echo what you're saying of making sure you are doing the due diligence of how much is the right amount mm-hmm. that you can allocate towards a private equity investment.
If I might add one more thing too, because you're mentioning it just even from the whole down home, down earth of this whole concept, but we do have a lot of people that call us because they'll be like, we're doing it. So one of the things that we, Kent and I do our own investments into these projects, we put our own money in. And so, example where you go is like, it's not like somebody's saying, I think this is a good idea. Like, I'm like, look, you're looking at that, project that we had that's an opportunity zone. I put in X amount. So Kent and I are putting in, our money as well. And so that's a big part that our investors have enjoyed is that we're doing what we're telling them to do.
Sure. That makes sense. Put your money where your mouth is. You believe in what you're doing enough to where you've got your own skin in the game.
Yep. Absolutely.
Great. So now, looking further into the future, have you given thought as to how this ends or what your exit strategy is or the legacy you want to leave behind when you hang up your hat? Or is that not even in the realm of where you're thinking? Yep.
Yeah, a lot of people ask us that. We snicker all the time because we don't know. We're not exactly clear because I'm 47, Brian's 45, right?
Yeah.
And so it's not like we're to the end of our runway yet.
Sure.
So
yeah.
We're growing and continuing to grow. We're very involved. We are doing daily appointments all day long every day and enjoying it. So, do we have kids that might be interested in it? Probably. Brian's got four kids. I've got four kids, right? So there's probably a chance they're interested in it, but it's a large company, right?
Yeah.
And do they want that pressure? Do they want that, that building? Or should, it be something that's turned over to the teams? And we have just such qualified, great execs and leaders at our company that, they might be in a better position to continue on with the companies as well.
Yeah, and it's from my view. We both snickers. We're like, we don't have to. We're 45 years old. Yeah, I have no plans to change anything that I'm doing today, anyhow. And we're having a blast. It really are. Today's interest rates is tossed. I'm working harder and dialed in more than I've ever been. But that's because business isn't easy right now. We just see the opportunity so much 2 years out. So our joke is we don't really have to. Can't mention the kids. But we are, in the meantime, we are growing a team that we expect them to take it over, and they are. Part of it, I go to the office, there's things I'm doing and working with clients and that, and investors, but they're operating the functions of the business. Construction operates. Tom and Carter are running that. We have people in the property manager, but everybody's running their parts of the business.
Sure.
So
your well-oiled machine, why would you stop it?
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah, it makes sense. And I wasn't trying to insinuate you're on your, last leg here or anything
Like
that.
Well, so. The personal side of it too, it switched from, years ago, my wife would counsel on how are we working in the business? And, we don't have enough money to keep going. What are we spending money on? And we keep going forward. And now it's like, hey, are you thinking about quitting? Like we did a tour with the family last year. We went and saw a bunch of Western states in the U.S. And I was like, hey, we could buy a house here we want to live here. And she's like, I don't know if you're going to quit, Brian. So, that's the fun part is you're like, we're having a blast. So,
yeah, it's easy to keep doing it when you're having fun.
Yeah,
for sure. For sure. Well, do you have any advice for a would-be investor of how they could, approach you or come to you and kick the tires to see if you'd be a good fit for them?
Yeah. We'd love to chat with people and just show them what we do. And talk through with them and their financial advisors to where we see us being a fit in somebody's portfolio. We offer some things that are different than, not every firm is able to offer what we're doing. And yet we have no products or offerings that fit, you know, a firm like this either. And so it's very complementary of each other. Is Brian and I know where we fit and where we are in a person's portfolio, but we're not everything to everybody, and we can't solve all of their needs. You brought up a couple of good points. There's a lot of advantages to real estate, and there are some disadvantages, right? There's some reasons not to put all of your net worth with us.
Yeah, I would say the fun part, like we do a cruise out of Minnetonka here with our investors, can't mention the events, but what we treat it all as, like we literally get on that boat and we're like, look, you know, we're here today, we're celebrating success, because there's people on that boat that have been way more successful than me.
Sure.
And so our relationship to these investors are, it's really a celebration of success. And there's times that we'll get together and we're like, hey, here's an idea, here's how we do real estate. And they'll be like, hey, here's an idea I have, here's what I'm working on. And so you're even exchanging opportunities to some regard. And so that's, I mean, my direct answer to your question is like, we just get together with people and hear what they're doing, what they're up to. Sometimes we fit, sometimes we don't. But we're always talking about opportunities, and that's the great part about what we do.
Great. If somebody wanted to get more information about the opportunities that are available now, where would they go? How would they obtain that?
Yeah, roarscompanies.com, right? Brian and I have our personal email addresses and cell phones as well, but yeah, we're open, and we get a lot of feedback and people reaching out to us.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's how we've continued to build our business.
And I didn't mean for you to give out your cell phone.
So I was ready to. I was trying to decide if I should or not.
You certainly could if you wanted to. That's not what I was going for there. So, well, great. Well, anything else you'd want to add or anything else you think we should know about your company?
No, I mean, I think it was a great recap of, you know, we love what we're doing. It's been really fun. It's been great working with people like you, Dan, even, and just in the whole financial planning world. Because really what we never lose track of with our teams is we're like, look, our product is because of our investors.
Sure.
And so we love touring people through the office. And the reason is not because I care about how much space we have or how pretty it is or anything like that, but it's I want our teams, our investors, to see that it is all about them when they put their money with us, because we never lose track, and I know you're the same way, of the trust people are placing in us. Because what are they doing with the money? Most of our investors are either A, you know, trying to create a legacy of a business of some kind, B, they're planning to give money back to charity, or C, pass on a legacy to family. And so it's like we're very clear what you're doing with this money. Most of them are not coming to us to put money in to buy another car or buy another boat. It's three very, very worldly items. And so we never lose track of that. I know you don't either, but that's been the most fun part for me in this world, is really living with those investors and what people care about.
Yeah.
You know, and it might be a half a step back, as you know, you were asking the question about Brian and I in the future and that. One of the things that we've been very intentional about the last couple years is we've really moved heavily into affordable housing.
Sure.
So while we've been very successful at doing market rate apartments, which are, I would say, a very nice product, an A-type product to offer to individuals for their house, right, is behind that is, you know, there's an affordability component out there, an issue that a lot of people are having. I mean, housing is getting very expensive for people, and it is outpacing what their, you know, incomes are going up at. And so something that Brian and I have done, and it's 50% of our practice right now, it's something that we don't get noticed as much for and probably don't spend as much time talking about. But of the, you know, the 16 projects that we did last year, half of them were affordable units, and half of them were market rate units, being, you know, regular individuals.
Mm-hmm.
So those affordable housing units are something that's taken Brian and I a lot of capital.
Sure.
Because it's a project that takes two and a half years to come to fruition. But we've got to buy the land ahead of time. We've got to pay architects and legal and everything else. And, you know, the government issues these tax credits that then we got to take and put with a very large institution that buys them. And then that provides the money for the mechanism to create, you know, 200 units or 350 units. And we're putting those all over the U.S. And it's something where people make, you know, 80% or 60% of the average median income, some down to 40 and 20%. So it's providing them a place to live. And it's good people that are actively employed and are contributing and just need a more affordable housing element.
Yeah, and that's probably not something that you could have done to start out the company with, right? You had to have a certain amount of weight behind you to be able to go and do those types of projects.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting, because obviously it's such a great thing, like, to do. Like, we feel really good about the firm doing it. It's so hard financially.
Sure.
Very few people or firms that have the team or the people that have the ability to do it. And once you do it, it's great. And it's the housing fills up. So it's kind of like it's the right thing to do. We feel really confident of it. And it is a stabilizer for the firm. And so when people sure. see our growth and everyone's going to get a little bit nervous, we're like, but we have this huge portfolio of affordable housing that it just chugs along. It stays full. People are occupied because there's insatiable demand for this product out there. And it's super fun because it's the right thing to do. And our teams can know that they're putting people in housing that would not have a house. So like I say, like, this project doesn't go forward. It's not like somebody is, you know, staying in their current apartment. They're sleeping on somebody's couch or they're at their parents' place because they can't get into a home. So it really is awesome thing that we've been able to do. Part of, as Kent described, when we took those proceeds in 2022, that's one of the areas we rolled them into was the affordable housing practice.
Yeah, very cool. And I think that, you know, for your employees too, it might be a little different sense of pride in what they're doing of helping people get into a home that normally wouldn't have been able to if it weren't for the work that they're doing.
Yeah, and we're, you know, to never lose a moment, we're looking for different ways because there's types of funds out there, as you know, I'm sure you guys have something where you can invest into a product like this of affordable housing. It's the right thing to do, and, you know, there should be some return in it. So that's been the funnest thing to start thinking about in the future if there's some way we can establish that.
Yeah, very cool. Well, thank you both for your time today. I really appreciate it, and congratulations on all the success you've had. And excited to see where you take the company in the future here.
Yeah, thanks for your time. This was really fun to be on here.
Yeah,
great. Thank you, Dan.
Well, that's it for today. I'd like to thank our guests, Brian and Kent Rowers, again for joining us. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. If any of you are interested in learning more about the Rowers Companies, visit roerscompanies.com. And if you're considering whether or not private real estate is a good option for your investment portfolio, give me a call to discuss. I'm at 952-475-9448. Please feel free to leave any feedback and subscribe to be notified of future episodes. This is your host, Dan Monahan, signing off. Thank you for listening, and until next time, mind your business.